ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय गुणैरलाम संख्येयाय महात्म्यं तस्य सूच्यते वासुदेवे भगवति यस्य नैषार्गिकी रतिः गुणैरलाम संख्येयाय तस्य सूच्यते वासुदेवे भगवति यस्य नैषार्गिकी रतिः with spiritual qualities alam what need asankhyai which are innumerable Mahatmyam, greatness, tasya of him, Prahlad Maharaj, Suchate is indicated, Vasudeve, to Lord Krishna, the son of Vasudeva, Bhagavati, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Yasya, of whom? Naishargiki, natural, Rati, attachment, translation. Who could list the innumerable transcendental qualities of Prahlad Maharaj? He had unflinching faith in Vasudeva, Lord Krishna, the son of Vasudeva, and unalloyed devotion to him. His attachment to Lord Krishna was natural because of his previous devotional service. Although his good qualities cannot be enumerated, they prove that he was a great saint. In his prayers to the ten purport, in his prayers to the ten incarnation, Jayadev Goswami says, Keshava Drita Narahari Rupa Jaya Jagadisha Hare Jai Jagadisha Hare. Prahlad Maharaj was a devotee of Lord Narasimha, who is Keshava, Krishna himself. Therefore, when this verse says, Vasudeve Bhagavati, one should understand that Prahlad Maharaj's attachment for Narasimhadeva was attachment for Krishna, Vasudeva, the son of Vasudeva. Prahlad Maharaj, therefore, is described as a great Mahatma, as the Lord himself confirms in Bhagavad Gita 7:19, Bahunam janmanam ante gyanavam mam prapadyate vasudeve sarvamiti sa mahatma sudurlabha. After many births and deaths, he who is actually in knowledge surrenders unto me, knowing me to be the cause of all causes and all that is. Such a great soul is very rare. A great devotee of Krishna, the son of Vasudeva, is a great soul very rarely to be found. Prahlad Maharaj's attachment for Krishna will be explained in the next verse. Krishna Graha Grahitatma. Prahlad Maharaj's heart was always filled with thoughts of Krishna. Therefore, Prahlad Maharaj is the ideal devotee of Krishna consciousness. Gunayar Alam Asankhyayar Mahatmyam Tasya Suchate Vasudevi Bhagavati Yasya Naishargiki Rati. Translation. Who could list the innumerable transcendental qualities of Prahlad Maharaj? He had unflinching faith in Vasudeva, Lord Krishna, the son of Vasudeva, and unalloyed devotion to him. His attachment to Lord Krishna was natural because of his previous devotional service. Although his good qualities cannot be enumerated, they prove that he was a great soul, Mahatma. So today is the appearance day of Lord Narasimha Dev, and he's one of the most important incarnations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna is the avatari, or the source of all incarnations, and he has six kinds of incarnations, of which Leela avatars are a very prominent category. Leela avatars include Rama, Narsingha, Kurma, Matsya, Varaha, Vamana. So we celebrate many of the appearance days of the Leela avatars, and Rama, among them Rama and Narsingha are especially prominent. These are especially important days to observe, therefore there's fasting on these days so that devotees can spend more time in hearing and chanting about the Lord. Of course, to hear the particular pastimes of the particular incarnation. So today we hear of Narsingha Dev, and when we hear of Narsingha Dev, then we always also hear of Prahlad Maharaj, because Narsingha Dev appeared in order to protect Prahlad Maharaj, and also to prove that the word of his devotee is true. It's effective, because Hiranyakashipu, the father of Prahlad Maharaj, he was so angry with his son's devotion to the Lord, to Lord Vishnu, to Lord Krishna, and he was so angry that he couldn't kill his son, that he challenged his son, and, "Where do you get your strength from?" And he said, "From Lord Vishnu, same place as you, father." And then he asked Prahlad, "Where is this Lord Vishnu?" And he said, "He's all-pervading, father." So then Narsingha Dev, Hiranyakashipu said that means he's in this pillar. And Prahlad Maharaj said, "Yes." So to test whether this was true or not, Narsingha Dev keeps saying, Hiranyakashipu smashed the pillar with his sword, and Narsingha Dev appeared from the pillar. So this proved the word of Prahlad Maharaj was true. And of course, it shows the Lord's inconceivable potencies, that he can appear in any way that he pleases. And definitely, this is one of the most extraordinary appearances of the Lord, that he appeared from a pillar. Of course, he appears in many extraordinary ways, just like Varahadev appeared from the nostril of Brahma, right? And Matsya appeared in the palm of the hand of King Satyavrata, am I right? Is that correct? He appeared in the palm of his hand and began to grow, and the king had to put him into first into a bowl of water, and then he expanded, he had to put him into a pool of water, then he expanded, then he had to put him into a pond and a lake and an ocean, like that, because he kept expanding. So there are, you know, many extraordinary appearances of the Lord, but this, you know, appearing from a pillar is really amazing. And not only appeared from a pillar, but his form was really extraordinary. Half man, half lion. It was never before seen such a form, inconceivable form of the Lord. And of course he immediately fought with Hiranyakashipu and defeated Hiranyakashipu, crushed him like an insect. Although Hiranyakashipu was so powerful that he had been able to defeat the demigods and occupy the throne of Indra. So this is an amazing feat, rarely accomplished. Now Bali Maharaj also accomplished this feat of defeating the demigods and occupying the throne of Indra. But demigods are very powerful. They're the rulers of the universe. They're managing all the universal affairs, and they're endowed with tremendous power by the Lord. So to overthrow them, you know, this requires a demon or personality of incredible strength. So when measured against living entities within this universe, Hiranyakashipu appears to be amazingly powerful. But when measured against Lord Nrisimhadeva, he was like an insignificant insect. All his pride was immediately crushed, and he was eliminated by the potency of the Lord. So such a powerful incarnation of the Lord appeared just to protect a small boy. I mean, externally speaking, Prahlad Maharaj appeared to be just a little fellow, a little boy. Why the Lord should appear to protect such a small boy? That's because Prahlad Maharaj was such an exalted Vaishnava devotee of the Lord. His life, of course, is extraordinary. He was so fortunate that while he was in the womb of his mother, he was able to hear the instructions of Narad Muni. Hiranyakashipu was away performing austerities, and the demigods thought that Hiranyakashipu's wife was pregnant. So the demigods thought that the child would be even bigger demon than his father. He should be killed. But Narada Muni knew that actually the child was a great devotee within the womb. And so he gave shelter to that lady at his ashram, and he was giving her instructions on spiritual life. But you know, she herself wasn't that attentive. You know, she was dozing off during the during the time when Narada Muni was instructing. The child in the womb, he heard these transcendental instructions, and he became very advanced in Krishna consciousness because of this. So when he appeared from the womb, he was already a great devotee. And therefore, in the next verse it explains, from the very beginning of his child, Prahlad Maharaj was uninterested in childish playthings. Indeed, he gave them up altogether, being fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness. So he wasn't an ordinary child by any means. Ordinary children are, you know, generally very, very absorbed in the world of toys and playthings, and considering them to be very real, and building sand castles and thinking that I'm the king of the castle and so on and so forth. But Prahlad Maharaj, you know, in this way, in childhood they lived in a kind of dream world, gradually introduced to the real world. Slow and gradual process. But Prahlad Maharaj didn't need that kind of pampering in his childhood. He was already a self-realized soul. And so he was interested in Krishna consciousness, in hearing and chanting about the Lord right from the start. Therefore, when his father sent him to school to study under the Sandana Marka, the teachers who were supposed to teach him all about materialistic life, when he was at school, he was preaching to his friends to be Krishna conscious, that human life is very rare. Therefore, one should not delay in taking to Krishna consciousness. One should begin right from the early years of childhood. In this way, he was convincing his friends to be devotees. And they were telling their parents about it. It got back to Hiranyakasipu. He was furious. And he thought the teachers are responsible. He wanted to punish them. They said, no, we are, teaching him all the things that you told us to teach him. So then he was questioning Prahlad, that where did you learn all this? What is all this business about Krishna? And Prahlad was preaching to his father, which was agitated Hiranyakashipu very, very much. But still, he gave another chance. Okay, he told the teacher, make sure that he studies his mundane subjects very nicely and gets all about this Vishnu spiritual life. What is all of this? But as we know, Prahlad Maharaj was unaffected. He continued to preach Krishna consciousness, risking the wrath of his father. And his father's wrath, of course, was merciless. He was ready to kill even his own son. What kind of demon is that? Such a great demon, ready to kill his own son. Actually, parents have affection for the children. He had affection for Prahlad, and he had great hope for Prahlad also. Parents want to see that their children grow up like them or even better than them, more expert in the things that they dreamed of doing. So he wanted to see his son become, he was affectionate to his son, he wanted to see his son become a powerful demon. So this was a great blow to Hiranyakashipu that his son was practicing Krishna consciousness, because Lord Vishnu was the mortal enemy of Hiranyakashipu. He knew that Lord Vishnu had appeared as Varaha and killed his elder brother, Hiranyaksha. So therefore, throughout his life, he had great hatred for Lord Vishnu and wanted to defeat him by any means, and thought himself powerful enough because he didn't understand the position of Lord Vishnu. Didn't understand that he's a supreme personality of Godhead, that he's the controller and maintainer of everything. And he thought that he himself could measure up to the Lord and was even greater than the Lord. So this is a demonic nature. If they get some position of power, or they do something, accomplish something in their lives, they take the credit themselves. They don't want to give the credit to anyone else, least of all to the Lord. But the devotee always gives credit to the Lord. The devotee is humble. He doesn't take credit himself. He gives credit to other devotees and he gives credit to the Lord. Without their mercy, without their instruction, the devotee thinks, I wouldn't be able to do anything or accomplish anything of significance. It's all their mercy. They give the intelligence, they give the facilities. You're simply, the devotees feel, I am simply the servant, I'm simply the order carrier. That's my duty. to follow the Lord's instruction, to follow the instructions of the Lord's representatives, and to remember the Lord all the time. This was the path that Prahlad Maharaj was following. He had full faith in the Lord. This point is made here in this verse. You know, he had unflinching faith in Vasudeva and unalloyed devotion to him. So it's because of that that the Lord reciprocated. The Lord is very merciful to his devotees, and he loves to have affectionate dealings with them. And if a devotee renders service to Krishna, it inspires Krishna to also render service to the devotee. And this inspires the devotee further to render more and more service, and the Lord becomes inspired by that and reciprocates more and more. And this is a case with Prahlad Maharaj. The Lord was really enlivened to see the devotion of Prahlad Maharaj, especially in the circumstances in which he had to practice that devotion. There are such difficult circumstances. We have nice facilities for practicing Krishna consciousness. Still we are struggling somehow to practice. Prahlad Maharaj, he had the most unfavorable circumstances. But that didn't deter him, because he knew that no material obstacle can obstruct the flow of devotion to Krishna. Just as Kapila Dev compares pure unalloyed devotional service to the Ganges. It's flowing to the sea, nothing can stop it. It has such momentum and volume. So in the same way, a great devotee like Prahlad Maharaj, his devotion was so great, and his faith in the Lord, his determination was so great that no material obstacle, no materialistic personality could obstruct that. Even the most powerful demon who had taken control of the whole universe, he couldn't stop the flow of devotion of a small child, seemingly small child. Of course, living entities are eternal, and therefore we have to be very cautious in judging people on their external appearance. Just like the Kumaras, they didn't want to marry, they wanted to practice spiritual life, so practice Brahmachari life. So they didn't follow the order of their father, Brahma, who became very angry with them. And as we know, in his anger, Lord Rudra came out from his forehead. But anyhow, Kumaras were able to maintain their bodies in a childlike state because of their mystic potency. And when the gatekeepers, Jayan Vijay, saw them trying to enter Vaikuntha, they stopped them. "You're just young children, you cannot enter here." Kumaras became upset with that. They said that you are judging us externally. You're not seeing our spiritual position. So that is the consciousness of people in the material world. Therefore, you should go to the material world. And of course, as we know, they appeared as demons, and three times as demons, and one of those times was Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha. So even though they were highly exalted persons, Jayan Vijay, they misjudged the position of the Kumaras. They judged them on their external appearance. So this is very, very common. It's a norm, you can say. In the material world, what to speak of persons who are the gatekeepers of Vaikuntha? That normally wouldn't happen. I mean, persons who are the gatekeepers of Vaikuntha, they're exalted devotees. So normally they're going to be able to, you know, see people's spiritual position. But this was a leela of the Lord. According to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, the Lord likes fighting sometimes. He likes a good fight. But in Vaikuntha, there's no one to fight with. And these gatekeepers, they understood that, and they actually aspired to satisfy the Lord's fighting propensity. And because of that, the Lord arranged the whole leela where the Kumaras were refused entry and cursed the gatekeepers, and then the gatekeepers, they had the choice of taking birth seven times as devotees or three times as demons, and they chose three times as demons. Of course, one reason given is that so they could get back to the spiritual world quicker. But again, I mean, if one is born as a devotee, and especially if that also has the blessing of the Lord, then, you know, one will be able to remain in Krishna consciousness, whether he's in the material world or the spiritual world. Prabhupada said, as soon as you remember Krishna, then, you know, if you're practicing Krishna consciousness, then you're in the spiritual world. He said material means forgetfulness of Krishna, but spiritual means remembrance of Krishna. So even one is in the material world, if he's remembering Krishna, well, he's properly situated. A great devotee like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he prayed, Bhaktivinoda Thakur prayed that I don't mind if I have to take birth again in the material world. He said, even as an insect, please let it be in the house of a devotee. So he felt, as long as I have the association of devotees, I can be Krishna conscious. Doesn't matter if I have to come back to the material world. So material or spiritual, well, it's all spiritual if a person is fully in Krishna consciousness, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, or like Prahlad Maharaj. Therefore, the choice of seven times as devotee was not a bad choice. You'd be Krishna conscious the whole time. Three times as demons, that would surely be an uncomfortable choice, even if you could get back quicker to Vaikuntha. So, the real reason, Vishwanath Chakravarti says, is that way they could, you know, give a battle to the Lord, give a good fight to the Lord. And these were the best of fights, as we know. They're described in the scriptures, and the devotees hear of them again and again. The fight of Ravana, Ram and Ravana, of course, is another wonderful leela which the devotees relish. So, it was an unusual choice, but it was the leela of the Lord. The gatekeepers got that opportunity to become such big demons and to give a good fight to the Lord. But of course, they were no match for the Lord. And the Lord played with them. It seemed like there was a bit of a tussle, and sometimes the demons seemed to be getting upper hand, both in the leela of Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. In both occasions, the Lord, you know, was able to defeat them without much effort. Varahadev crushed. Yeah, it's like cat and mouse. So, just a good play. Yeah, cat plays with the mouse, right, before killing it. So the same thing. played with these demons, Lord played with these demons and then crushed them. Prahlad Maharaj, all the while he was Krishna, fully Krishna conscious. And his father was trying to kill him. Prior to that also, when he was in the womb, when he was just a child at school, he was always Krishna conscious. When his father tried to kill him, he remained Krishna conscious. There were so many attempts to kill him in so many different ways, throwing in boiling ghee under the feet of elephants and a pit of snakes, throwing him from a cliff, trying to smash him on the ground, all the different ways. Whatever he tried, Hiranyakashipu couldn't succeed. Prahlad Maharaj was calm. He was fixed in Krishna consciousness. And after the Lord killed his father, then Lord, of course, Nrisimhadeva is anger personified. The Lord's anger personified. So even after, you know, killing the demon, the Lord was still in a very angry mood. And the demigods, of course, were very pleased that he had killed Hiranyakashipu, but they also wanted to pacify the Lord, but they were not confident they could do themselves, so they pushed Prahlad forward. So Prahlad, he had no fear. The demigods were afraid of the Lord in an angry mood. Prahlad had no fear and came forward to offer his prayers to the Lord, offered very beautiful prayers, and Hiranyakashipu asked him, "What benediction would you like?" And he didn't ask any benediction. Sorry, Nrisimhadeva asked him. I'm a bit tired. Nrisimhadeva asked him, "What benediction would you like?" And he said, "For myself, I don't need any benediction." He said, "I'm your devotee. I'm engaged in your service. You know, I don't need anything. That's already perfection of existence. For myself, I don't need any benediction. But please forgive my father." He asked him, "Please forgive my father for his offenses." So this is so compassionate, such a compassionate Vaishnava. Even though Hiranyakashipu was such a demon, such an offender, still Prahlad Maharaj was thinking of his spiritual welfare and asked the Lord to forgive him. So, Paradukaduki, the Vaishnavas, they are unlimitedly merciful, just like Vasudev Datta. He requested Lord Chaitanya that, "Let me take the sinful reactions of all the living entities in the universe so that they can all be liberated." This was his desire to uplift others. So Prahlad Maharaj's mood was the same. In school, he wanted to give Krishna consciousness to his friends. Later, he wanted his father be forgiven. So he wanted that everyone could become Krishna conscious. So this is the mood of the devotee. And therefore, it's sometimes said that devotees are even more merciful than the Lord himself. And they go to great lengths to give Krishna consciousness to others. They perform great austerities to preach, take great risks, and prophet cites the examples of Jesus Christ, who was crucified, Haridas Thakur, who was beaten in 22 marketplaces for his preaching activities. So the demons are very opposed to the preaching of the Lord and the Lord's devotees. Try to give trouble to the Lord's devotees, and they'll even try to give trouble to the Lord, think that they can obstruct the Lord's plans and progress in some way. But of course they will ultimately be vanquished. The devotees will ultimately be victorious in every situation. Even though in Kali Yuga, of course, this is also a very awkward situation for the devotees, but still, Krishna consciousness will spread regardless of the demon's attempts to smother it or to smash it. And you know, in some situations, demons have really tried to smash the devotees, like in former Soviet Union, tried very hard, but they were not successful. The Buddhists were able to go on practicing Krishna consciousness, even in very difficult conditions, being tortured, beaten. Some of you have probably read that book, Salted Bread. Any of you seen that book? Salted Bread. It's a book by Sarva Bhavanadas, an Armenian Buddha. So he describes how, you know, in the former Soviet Union, the devotees were, you know, they heard about Krishna consciousness, they began to practice, they began to distribute books. And those days, you know, you couldn't just go and to some printing house and print the books. The books were printed in Sweden, actually. And Russian books were printed in Sweden, Bhagavad Gita. And Krishna book was also given a different name. Stotsnik, Vishnava Naslajdeni, right? The source of eternal enjoyment. The source of eternal enjoyment. That was the title given to the Krishna book. So it wouldn't be too obvious. Because, books were printed in the West also in a very small format. And then Kirti Raj Prabhu would organize that the places where Russian tourists would go. So he would send some distributors there to distribute books to the Russian tourists. And that way they would go into the country. And then devotees inside Soviet Union would get copies of those books. And they would Xerox copy them. And then they would, you know, in their apartments. I mean, sometimes I had a chance to visit back then. And in those years, and visit the apartments of some of the devotees, and you know, they'd have all these Xerox sheets there, and they'd be sitting there, you know, folding them, and then gluing them, and then stitching them, and then gluing the books, and you know, making the books like that, and then in cars they would transport them around. So Armenia was one of the places, you know, where many devotees joined in the beginning. And they began, you know, distributing books there in Yerevan, the capital of Armenia. And the KGB was always harassing them in this way and that way. And eventually many of them were put into prison. And then they were harassed and tortured in so many ways that the authorities used to give them, they were put in prison or many were put in psychiatric homes. Many would administer drugs. Injections. Those injections would stop people from concentrating. Because they thought, you know, they were like, they had become hypnotized by this repeated chanting of the mantra. So they wanted to break their focus on that. You know, so they couldn't concentrate on anything. And devotees were telling me, you know, when they would inject them with these drugs, then it's very uncomfortable to, you know, do anything. You felt uncomfortable if you stood up, or if you sat down, or if you lay down. You know, any position, you always felt uncomfortable. But somehow they would go on, you know, chanting, and even they would, you know, they didn't have any devotional paraphernalia, but the parties would give them bread. Salted bread, that you wouldn't eat meat, that's all they could eat. And they would also make beads, you know, from the bread, a dried bread, somehow or other. They would, you know, crush it into, you know, small circular balls and then dry it out and then get some string and join together, and then they could use that for chanting. And they would chant, you know, many, many rounds. They'd be chanting all day. What else is there to do? Practically day and night. So do her best and search. Many devotees were sent to labor camps. The book describes how the devotees were, put into the psychiatric home in Yerevan, and then later some of them were transported. They were transported to Baku in Azerbaijan, and then they were transported to Siberia and put into some labor camps. And it described how one devotee, Satchisuddha, he died in the labor camp. He was a close friend of Sarva Bhavana, actually. I remember when I first went to Yerevan, and I went to Sarva Bhavana's house. And this was some years later. He had been released by he had actually made a deity of Satchisuddha, kept his deity of Satchisuddha in his home. He was a very close friend of his. So devotees had to undergo tremendous difficulties at the hands of the demons, but they had that faith in Krishna consciousness, and they were determined to go on practicing in all circumstances, and of course they were victorious, as we know. They were released, and eventually Krishna conscious movement was recognized. ISKCON was officially registered, and still is, and devotees can print books, they can have temples, and can invite foreign preachers. We go there with religious visa. So it's all very, above board and authorized. In the early days, we had to go on in-tourist tours. In-tourist, of course, was famous for the in-tourist guides would be spies. They would have to observe what the visitors were doing. I have one disciple who was formerly an in-tourist guide. He spoke English, good Japanese. So they were obliged to report anything unusual that they saw. So we had to live in into hotels, $100 per night. It's expensive to go there. And also go on the bus tours. They would take us on the bus tour of Moscow, St. Petersburg, and visit even a church, Orthodox church. They had just to show, make some show that there was some kind of religious practice. And they take it to church, but of course there are very few churches functioning. Most of the important churches were even demolished. The most famous church in Moscow was demolished by Stalin and had built a swimming pool there. And what is that? Astrakhan. I went to Astrakhan. Beautiful church there. During Soviet time, it was a bus station. Nowadays, of course, there's been a revival. That important church has been rebuilt. this was the mentality of the communists to wipe out religious practice. Religion is the opiate of the people. Very similar, demonic attempt. Just wipe out all kinds of religious, spiritual practices. Send everybody out to work in the factories and, produce, and we'll turn this place into ideal country. It used to be the Soviet Union would publish these propaganda magazines. They would be distributed widely in many countries of the world. We used to see them in India. They were published in different languages there, and depicting the glories of the Soviet Union, how it was such an ideal place, and we are building communism, we are building the perfect state. So this is demonic leadership. No attention at all to spiritual life, no belief at all in spiritual life, no belief in God. Seeing everything just on the mundane platform, in material terms. But fortunately, at least in that case, this demoniac attempt to crush Krishna consciousness was not successful. And it won't be, even in China today also, I haven't been there, but I've heard that the authorities give the devotees a hard time. You know, if the devotees have to meet very secretly in their apartments, and they can't go out wearing beads or anything. You know, they have to keep very low key. Of course, the authorities there, they tolerate that then at that level. They've thrown a few people out of the country, a few foreigners, but their own citizen, they just, you know, they keep this repressed as much as possible. They haven't gone as far as actually putting people into labor camps and prison and torturing them like that. But I mean, that was a really serious attempt by the demons to wipe out Krishna consciousness, but couldn't do so because of the faith of the devotees. So they're following in the footsteps then of Prahlad Maharaj. He showed the way what to do when a devotee is in difficulty. Certainly devotees will have to face difficulties in the material world to preach Krishna consciousness, but if they go on practicing seriously, then Krishna will protect them, just as Krishna protected Prahlad Maharaj, or Krishna protected the devotees in the former Soviet Union. So Prahlad Maharaj is a very important devotee, therefore, and we should always hear of his glories and hear his teachings. Of all, Prabhupada did more lectures from 7th canto, from the teachings of Prahlad Maharaj, than he did from any other portion of the Bhagavatam. It shows the importance of Prahlad Maharaj. So therefore, on this auspicious day, we should pray for the mercy of Prahlad Maharaj, and also for the protection of Lord Narsingadev. Prabhupada, when he was very ill, I think in San Francisco, 68 perhaps, he had some heart attack, and the devotees were asking what could they do, and Prabhupada told them to put a picture of Narsingadev on the altar and chant. He taught them this prayer. The prayer has two parts, Namaste Narsingaya. That part we find in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Lord Chaitanya, before entering the temple of Lord Jagannath, there's a temple of Lord Narsingadev near the Singhadwara. He would offer his respects to Lord Narsingadev there, and he would chant Namaste Narsingaya Prahlada Ladaini. The other portion, Tavakara Kamala Bhavena Kamabhutasim, comes from the prayers of Jayadev Goswami, Dasavatar Stotra, joined together. Those are the prayers that Prabhupada told the devotees to chant for the protection of the movement, for his protection. So since that time, that's always been a tradition in ISKCON, to keep the picture of Prahlad Narsingha on the altar and to chant those prayers after the aratis. So therefore on this day we pray to the Lord for the protection of ISKCON, for the protection of the devotees, and to Prahlad Maharaj also to guide us and to enliven us in the devotional service of the Lord. So thank you. Any question or comment? Yes, please.
Maharaj, Vasudevdat, you mentioned, was he in the previous last name?
Who?
Vasudevdat.
In the pastimes of Lord Krishna? Anyone know that? It could be mentioned in Gaur Ganadesh Deepika, and maybe Prabhupada has mentioned in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, but I cannot recall. But Prabhupada did say in the purport he was more merciful even than Jesus Christ. He was ready to take the sins of all the living entities in the universe so that they could be delivered. But Lord Chaitanya said, no, Krishna will not allow you to suffer. Like that, he'll deliver them even, you know, without you having to
suffering.
Just by your desire. Okay, thank you very much. Shri Nishringadev Bhagavan ki, Shri Palad Maharaj ki, Shri Nishringachaturdasi ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samhita Bhaktivinoda ki, Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Gaur Premanandi.